20 Buddhists in the Air Force.
Yeah.
So I really didn't have a whole lot to go with to keep me spiritually grounded, except for Lam, which helped me a great deal. And I wrote to you about it and told you about the book exchange that we had, and not a week and a half later, I got a box from Hawaii with 20 of your books, and you'd signed them all. After that, I went forward for the first time, and they don't let us take sand back from the Middle East anymore. Mm-hmm. So instead, I brought with me American flags to all the countries that I went to. And so I have for you, and I've held on to this now for 2 years, meaning to bring this to you.
So I'll see you in San Francisco. We'll do this again.
I'm going back in September, so I'll try to bring you something else.
I'm humbled. I don't know. I can't tell you anything but thank you. Fuck. I should have read. Thank you. No. Thank you. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, one of the that you said that. Only in that I think that we all know that I've been wildly critical of the administration from day one, and I know where you guys are probably so tired of politics you could just hurl. But I have also, you know, had guys like you that I figure, hey, you know, I have this minimal gift, and you guys are out there with your ass on the line, so thank you. No, thank you. So. And I'm glad you made it back okay. I'm sure somewhere in my correspondence I told you be safe. You know, that tends to be my cliche.
And party like a drunken mullah.
I'm still a little fuzzy on Islam. I was just trying, you know, it was PR. I was trying to help you, you know. So anyway, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, question.
Right.
It's a tough title. And
fabulous book. I was wondering how you came up with that, per se, and some of the Tucker stories.
The Tucker Case stories. She asked me about the title of Island in Sequin Love Nun, and am I planning to extend the Tucker Case stories?
I noticed, and I think it was The Stupidest Angel.
Stupidest Angel.
Bring back some of the characters.
Right. Right. Well, I don't really plan. I didn't plan on The Stupidest Angel. Yeah. Well, the title came in order to attract attention to myself. No, because I wasn't getting. You know, I mean, it's. You know, you want to build an audience and you want to get new readers, and they're walking along, and you're in a line with, you know, 70 other brand new books that are out, and you want people to go because that title isn't going to trip off the tongue. You know. That was why I titled it that. I came up with kind of the weirdest descriptive, obscure title I could come up with that sounded sort of B-movie-ish. And as far as Tucker Case coming back, that was by request. I'm one of the few authors that take requests. I didn't plan on... No, it's because you guys know. I mean, how many of you have emailed me and I've answered?
Yeah.
You know, many.
Bravo.
Yeah. You guys wrote me, and you said, and I kept getting, I want to see Roberto the Fruit Bat. I want to see Roberto the Fruit Bat. When's Roberto coming back? Well,
he's here tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. So when I went to write the, I actually got accused by a couple of reviewers of being lazy by recycling characters. Because, yeah, bringing a Micronesian giant fruit bat to Central California for Christmas was the easy way to go. So many of my readers asked for Roberto to come back that when I had a story that was that sort of had an opening or I could create one for, I brought, and he had to have Tucker Case with him. And Tucker Case is sort of a universal smartass, so he was a great guy to have in the book at that point because he's a another one of these. He's like Biff. He's sort of he's fearless, basically. He's very courageous. He's just sort of a rascal. And so he was a great guy to introduce into there. It was, and I didn't plan him to be in Stupidest Angel, but he was. As many of the characters that came, obviously the angel was, you know, because title. The angel is from Lamb, my other book. But it's often by request. You know, this new book has a character from Coyote Blue because you guys have been asking me, when are we ever going to see Minty Fresh again? Yeah. Well, it's the bonus question because you guys don't get to hear it. Right now I'm working on the sequel to Bloodsucking Fiends.
Actually, no, I
saw what?
It. Has
yeah, Fiends. Yeah, but we didn't want to give that away. Yeah, sorry. No, it does have. It has another character. It has a number of characters from Bloodsucking Fiends in it because they all take place. It's okay.
When's
it
coming out?
What, the new one? I'm touring for a new book. I'm here for a book. Have you read the new one? Oh shit. Huh? Did you say something? Oh, I thought somebody told me. Bail me out. I'm about half finished with it. It'll probably be out about this time next year. So it's You Suck, A Love Story by Many Copies. No, you came from North Carolina. I'll be right back
to
you.
No, it was kind of just an adjunct. I was wondering if you had, by request, on the Bloodsucking Fiends.
No, I just thought it would be really cool to have Jody walk through the book. You know, for you, and that's also, you know, I don't want to patronize you. It's just also... I really think that what I do is a communication.
Oh, I meant the sequel. Did you do the sequel as a request?
No. I always wanted to do a sequel. I just wasn't successful enough to get anybody to pay me to do it until now. you know, because, you know, New York Times. But I had always planned that. But putting her in Dirty Job was just kind of, because you'd only know if you read the other books who she is. And that scene is in the other book, but from her point of view. Have I ruined it for you? Yeah, so that's those people that have stuck with me when nobody ever heard of me,
right,
you know, that's your little, you know, your goldfish crackers. But you know, for new people, it doesn't hopefully ruin it for them. So, and there was somebody back here. No, you're last. yeah, you, sir. Yes. Okay. My motivation for writing Coyote Blue. Is somebody's cell phone going off, or is it John Philip Sousa snuck into the room? That makes sense, I guess, every 5 minutes. Coyote Blue, I was researching my first book, Practical Demon, I had to think of what it was, Practical Demon Keeping, which is about a demon. And every time I would look up demon stuff, I would say, see Trickster. So I started seeing Trickster. And I ran across, you know, these gods who existed as nothing more than to really deliver irony to us. And those of you who have deeply studied my work know that I sort of think irony is the most powerful force in the universe. Not rhetorical irony, but the kind of irony where you don't pay your insurance and then you wreck, you know, or you forget to recharge the fire extinguisher and the house burns down. That kind of bite you in the ass irony. And it turns out that Coyote is sort of just around to deliver that. And I thought, how cool would it be to bring him into the modern world, which seems to be so fraught with that, and give him an identity. And then it became a Native American book when I started, you know, narrowing down the tribe I would choose, because, you know, that was the other cool thing about Coyote is he was almost universal in the Native American tribes as the trickster. So, you know, picking the Crow was completely by accident. It was a gift, you know, because they were so cool. When I went to Crow to research, I was there for a month. The Crow, they call it the reservation Crow, although it's Absaroka is the thing. The first thing that one of the guys from the tribal council told me, he says, "No, there's Indians and there's Crow." You know, it's like they're not, you know. And when the French first discovered the Crow, they said, "Well, we won't tell you much about them because they're not going to be around by the time you get here because they're enemies with everybody," and the Crow, although they will powwow with the other Indians and they're friends, they're still this. They got an attitude. They're like, "Screw you! You were always our enemy. You're still our enemy. Have a beer." And that was great to have, you know, Sam be a Crow Indian. But the motivation was basically bringing a trickster into the modern world, and Coyote was the one. So, now should I take one more question? What do you think? Come on, yeah. One more question. Yeah, didn't you? You better be good.
All right, well, I had an original question,
completely.
Yeah. That's a lot of medication. Well done. Thank you. What was the first question? Who are my favorite comedians? You mean like stand-ups? Yeah. I like a guy named Jake Johansson a lot. He's really smart. Eddie Izzard, I think is friggin' brilliant. You know, Cake or Death is like, I still... You guys know that, Cake or Death? Church of England, if they ran the Inquisition, it would have been Cake or Death. You know, you gotta buy the DVD, Dress to Kill. Let's see. I grew up on, you know, Robin Williams and Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor and all those guys. I mean, and one of the things when I teach writing, and people always say, well, can you teach people to be funny? No, but you can teach comic timing. And you can learn, even in the written form, you can learn comic timing by watching people who are really good and how they deliver lines. And you just use your he said, she said, and your commas and your punctuation for your comic timing. So those people informed my work because I was watching them as I was growing up. When I say growing up, I don't mean from a kid, but I mean as a writer, you know, in my 20s and so forth. But most recently, certainly Eddie Izzard, Jake Johansson. Trying to think of somebody I've seen recently, but those guys come to Jake Johansson isn't as well known, but he's really got a cool delivery, and he does smart comedy. Whoopi I think is terrific. She certainly was, you know, when she was, you know, first showed up and was doing her one woman show. I never saw him live, but Bill Hicks was good. But I don't think I have been familiar enough with his work to say he's an influence or a favorite. Certainly smart. I kind of shy away from people who are really pissed off. I got to a point in life, and I mean, this is something I hope is reflected in my work. You know, people always ask me, what's off limits? Mean-spiritedness, you know, is where what's off limits. Everything else, you know, I'll talk about, but it just doesn't, unless it's the Bush administration, then mean-spiritedness is okay. Bill Hicks was so pissed off. It's like Lenny Bruce. You know, the guys that grew up with Lenny Bruce, they worship him. But I'm like, Lenny Bruce is sort of scary, you know. He just didn't seem to get onto the other side of being pissed off, you know. And that was something I wanted to let go of. What informed that, if this helps your question, was John Steinbeck and his Cannery Row and Sweet Thursday and Tortilla Flat, where he talks about these extraordinarily flawed people with this very benevolent and forgiving voice, and he's funny. And I thought, well, if I aspire to anything, it is to recognize that, you know, the thing that we all share as human beings are our flaws. That indeed may be our humanity, and that's what I saw in Steinbeck's work. So as silly as my stuff is, you know, when I get lost, that's what I pick up, is Cannery Row or Sweet Thursday. So my favorite comedian, who would have thought, Sweet Thursday, is John Steinbeck, you know. Which, you know, when you read Grapes of Wrath, you know, not so much. But a lot of people don't get me on my Steinbeck rant about why they give us Mice and Men instead of Cannery Row, you know, so that you're exposed to, yeah, and then the little guy kills the big guy who likes mice. Because it's literature. And it's like, yeah, thank you. I didn't read Steinbeck for 10 years after that. Anyway, thank you all for coming. I appreciate it.